Hey, what's going on? Good morning. Welcome to the Raptors Show. I'm Blake Murphy. Will Liu is off today. I did think about hijacking the show today and doing another Jays Talk Plus because the Toronto Blue Jays opened their season yesterday with an 8-2 victory. It was a very, very fun game. Very good start to the season. They're back in action again today and all weekend on Sports at 590 The Fan, on the Sports at Television side as well. We're not doing Jays today, though. There were a couple very spicy March Madness games last night as well. And we're not going to do those either. It's the Raptors Show, even though Will Liu is off. The Raptors Show is brought to you by Campbell's new chunky, spicy soup. It's time to get fired up. And today we're going to get fired up about Grady Dick's rookie season and the kind of three acts that this season has played out in. The early struggle, the valley where he was down with the 905, not playing particularly well, pulled out of games for a couple weeks to work on his conditioning. And now this last chunk of the season where he's basically been the only positive in a lot of these Raptors games. And as you take those three chunks of season, we're going to take today, we're going to recontextualize the season as a whole, what it means for where Grady's at in his development and what it could mean for him next year and moving forward with the Raptors. To help me do that, Samson Folk of Raptors Republic, Esfandiar Barahany of Raptors Republic / Forbes / whatever we're going to call
we're
you.
We're a Raptors Republic duo right now. Let's rock with it.
What's up, guys?
Yeah. Doing good. Speaking of the Grady Dick thing, last year I went to Salvador Dali, his like impression or surrealist art based on Dante's Inferno, Hell, Purgatory, Heaven, the Ascension through it all.
There you go.
That's kind of Grady's season, man. So I'm excited to talk about it. We talk Grady every time I'm here.
Yeah, the last time both of you came on, and like that wasn't intentional, but as I was going through and looking at that episode, I was like, it makes sense. We did the like, this is really bad check-in, and now we're doing the things are a lot better check-in. I got a little Dali right here, a little melting clock on me.
There you go.
Anyway.
It took you a while to get there. You're like, so many tattoos.
There's a lot of stuff on here. I don't remember what is where sometimes. Anyway, S, how are you, man? Great piece at Forbes today, talking to the president of the Basketball Africa League and about what they are, Amadou Gallo Fall is his name. And they're what, 4 years in now?
Yeah, they're starting their fourth season. And I think most of the conversation, I had an hour long conversation with him, which is rare to get like a commissioner of a basketball league to sit down for an hour, but he was great. He pretty much broke down the goal that they have with the league. And a lot of it sort of reminded me of the industry they've built basketball wise in Canada. He was like, man, as the same time as all these, like African NBA players are growing and becoming stars, you're seeing Afrobeats becoming popular. You're seeing African culture and African movies becoming popular. And, you know, in some ways, like Canadian, that's sort of what happened over the last decade or so with basketball. It's like you see some of the artists from Canada that are popping off. Drake, You Need to Respond. And you see some of the other stuff, you know, Canadian basketball, Raptors championship. It's interesting to see the comparison there. You know?
And look, the biggest takeaway I got from your piece at Forbes, and everyone should go check out your Twitter and check that article out, is this idea that this is not, it's not just about creating the next wave of basketball players. And I talked to Masai a little bit about this through Giants of Africa as well. Last summer, I did a feature piece on a WWE wrestler named Omos, who came to America from Nigeria through Giants of Africa to play basketball.
Nice.
His college basketball career didn't work out, and now he's a WWE wrestler.
That's so cool.
Like, there are other opportunities here, and your chat with Amadou Gallo Fall, you know, the quote of, we're also trying to create, like, the next Masai Ujiri. So this basketball infrastructure, people to not only get interested in the sport and come to love the sport, but to have multiple paths to making a life in the sport. So it's cool. I mean, I'm sure we've all heard Masai speak about this, but how much of that echoed, you know, obviously Masai doesn't have a direct hand in Basketball Africa League, but it does seem like their goals and the goals Masai has talked about for, you know, two decades really with Giants of Africa are fairly hand in hand.
Yeah. But, I mean, sorry, go ahead. No, I was just going to say they're friends. Like, they talk all the time. And obviously Masai was there for, I think, the inaugural season, the opening debut, and like, it all goes hand in hand. You talk about Basketball Without Borders, NBA Africa, they have the NBA Academy, which a couple of the top prospects for the 2025 draft will be a part of that. Kaman Maluak, who's South Sudan, big man, going to Duke next year to play alongside Cooper Flagg. Like, these are guys who came out from the BAL.
Wonder if he'll be on the Olympic roster.
Maybe. Yeah, he probably will be. He was in the FIBA World Cup roster for them.
Yeah.
So, like, there's
an
easy transition
there. Yeah,
why not?
Unless Duke is like, yeah,
right,
don't
yeah,
do
Duke,
it. But
Blue Devils are like, don't do it. But, no, South Sudan, also another kind of check in the, like, accomplishments for the continent, because the youngest country ever to clinch an Olympic berth. They've been around for 12 years. And, you know, Luol Deng, he credited Luol Deng for his ability to sort of like build up that program. So, yeah, things are growing, man. It's awesome to see. It's great that the NBA can like build a foundation there and then create this sort of industry around it that can support not only basketball players, but creating jobs for people, building futures, building careers like the wrestler that you
and all the skills that you can build just by being around sport more, right? And I know obviously there was access to soccer and in some of those countries, cricket and things like that, but it never hurts to have more opportunities to build the kind of skills that sports bring out of you, especially at a young age.
Yeah, for sure.
And I was just going to say, I really love that you wrote that because a lot of people, the way they view it is like this homogenous idea that it's like NBA talent in Africa, but similar to the Division I basketball is like, nobody goes to the NBA. It's infrastructure to support people as they pursue things that they enjoy, as they build themselves up as people, and then set themselves up to succeed. So widening people's perspective on what happens
big time
is really important. So
is it like 1% of D1 athletes end up getting to maybe less?
Not everyone is one and done at Kansas, and then the youngest player in the, or one of the youngest players in the NBA draft, and then hey, here day one, you're in an NBA rotation. We use that as a pivot point unplanned. So we are going to talk the most of this hour about Grady Dick. So again, the season kind of broken into chunks, shaky start. And there was that window in the first couple games. Where it was like, oh, the shot's not dropping, but he's doing some other cool stuff. And then that kind of went away, whether that was confidence-based or trying to do too much or rushing things or whatever. And then he was out of the rotation. And then he's down with the 905, and things didn't look good with the 905. And I can throw the caveats out there that, oh, he was playing down there when all three point guards were hurt, and, like, there was no one to get him the ball. It's not a great environment for shooting specialists anyway, just the way, you know, those offenses work. And, you know, there are lesser defenders, but it's also, like, you might be playing with two guys who just got in an Uber from Charlotte to Greensboro for a game that literally happened once this year of like, we don't have enough players to play two guys in an Uber. Let's get them out here. They might not be able to run the offense that well. They're setting your staggered pin downs might not be in the right spot. They might not make that pass in your shooting pocket and things like that. But if you are a certain level of talent, you're expected to figure that out at the G League. He didn't really do that. And when he got called back up and was put back in NBA minutes, I was a little skeptical. I didn't think he had shown me enough at the G League level at that point. I have been wrong. He has basically, since he's come up, and there have been little dips, but basically since he came back up and re-entered the rotation, which was around January 20th, I think was kind of the, or that was the last game he hasn't missed a game since. He hasn't been out of the rotation since. It's been not linear, but pretty smooth since then. So let's zoom out and look at this season as a whole right now, and there are 10 games left, but we can do this right now. So Samson, I'll start with you. How are you feeling at it? And we'll get into some of the specifics, play types, you know, what he's doing skill wise and stuff. But the Grady Dick, 73 games in rather, rookie experience. How are you feeling?
I feel really good. And because we've seen the ceiling of what he can provide, I know he just set his career high, really well done. The things that needed to translate have translated at this point. 36% from three isn't a home run necessarily, but for a guy who had to kind of like stay afloat during a really long streak of 25% around that, you know, the changing body, getting stronger, getting the cardio in a better position, great to see. And we also see like incredibly soft touch at the rim, can finish with both hands, can do it over contact and around contests. We see him like one of the best cutters on the team, will be one of the best cutters in the NBA by the time he's able to weaponize everything at once. And then also on top of that, I think we see a guy who's, his movement helps liberate others. It's like that Marianne Williamson, you know, the quote that was like misattributed to Nelson Mandela. What's your greatest fear? You know, we allow others to. Yeah, anyway. But yeah, he's been doing great. I've enjoyed the season.
These quotes. First answer about, like, Salvador Dali and the stages of Dante's Inferno is one thing, but hey, man, this teenage rookie out of Kansas is like, well, let me get into this Nelson Mandela comp.
Yeah.
Let's kick it to S here and be a little.
I don't have any comps. Grounded.
You don't have any misattributed quotes from some of the most important figures in sports history.
I don't have anything.
Or world history generally. How are you feeling about how this has gone? And I guess more to the way I've set this up. The path the season has taken, how has that, you know, versus if he had come in and been a little less than he is now, a little more than he was at the start, but it was pretty even all the way through. What have the ups and downs How have they informed your opinion of where Grady's at right now?
I think those ups and downs were going to be natural for any rookie. You look at a lot of the rookies that are in the league right now. I mean, Scoot Henderson is one of those guys that is a pinpoint for a lot of people where he hasn't had a successful rookie year whatsoever. And so people look at that and say, well, where do we draw our takes from, our perspective from, to move forward with this guy's career? And he's had his up and downs, but he's been good. Like, he's had moments, he's had flashes. And with Grady, I think it's been more than flashes. He's had opportunities to really expand his game, especially down the stretch here. And I think part of the struggle, I'm not going to pull out a quote, but part of the struggle is important to the process. And I think, you know, that G League run that he had where you said, like, he was not good whatsoever, the one positive that you can take away from that was that I think he got, what, 30 minutes a night,
yeah.
35 minutes a night, and it was pretty consistent run. And so that helped him build up his cardio, get his cardiovascular muscles up a little bit, you know, get the lung capacity going. And so it helped. I thought that element provided the foundation for what we see in the second half of the season. And man, it's been awesome to watch him sort of work through the kinks of what he can do skill set wise too.
Yeah. And look, that G League, in addition, he averaged almost 35 minutes a game and got up 14 shots a game, which he wasn't now. He's allowed to do that. But when he was, you know, coming off the bench and the Raptors had five actual NBA starters starting games and things like that, there weren't going to be 14 shots a game there. And he did shoot 28% on threes in the G League, which was, you know, also a little concerning. And I don't know how much of that is, you know, as he does this conditioning program in season, how much of that's getting your legs under you. Just that little ability, extra ability, if you're above the break and coming off of movement, to have a little more in your shot. So let me ask you about that. Now, obviously, the three-point percentage is going to be the headline item with Grady for a long, probably forever. No matter what he rounds out his skill, the three-point shooting is going to be his biggest weapon. And you mentioned, Samson, that he's gotten that up now to where he's at 36% on the season. Completely reasonable for a rookie, even one who came in with high expectations for a shooting. When we look at that a little closer, he's been one of the very best corner three-point shooters in the league. He's shooting 47%. That's top 20 among guys with the cutoff that I use for corner three volume. So that's really, really good. And then on the above the break stuff, it's at 28.4%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is to be expected a little bit. The league-wide, people shoot better out of the corners. Obviously, above the break, that's a longer three. Yep. Usually, it's a more difficult three because more of those are self-created or off-movement, things like that. Samson, when you hear those splits, when you've watched Grady, and obviously, the better he is, the more you're going to want to move him out of the corners, right? Like there's a reason that superstars have zero corner three-point attempts. It's because you don't want your best offensive weapons in the corners. What do you make of that and where he's at as a spot-up guy right now versus a guy who can be a little bit more dynamic as a shooter?
I think that the efficiency is leaning towards just, like, spot-up stuff, but his usage with the Raptors is leaning towards somebody they view as a guy who isn't just a shooter, but can be, like, a top-down decision-maker that allows the team to kind of benefit from everything he does. So as far as, like, above-the-break screening, he's the 99th percentile as far as, like, wide pins. Everyone should remember that as kind of like the Norman Powell play.
Yeah.
And basically, so the stat here is among players who have received over 50 wide pins, he's fifth in the NBA in screens used per game.
Okay.
So is this a second spectrum stat?
So someone's feeding you this.
Wow.
This is per sources.
Big time. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, per data provided to Sportsnet.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because it's not provided to Raptors Republic right now. It's provided to Sportsnet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so those wide pin downs, anyone who's received a certain amount of them, he's at the very tippy top.
Very tippy top. We're talking about, like, Klay Thompson. We're talking about Lauri Markkanen. We're talking about, like, Jordan Clarkson, Max Strus. These guys that they want to get them room to draw gravity, to draw guys out, to be able to make these laydown passes to guys rolling to the rim, and to be able to shoot. Mm. And so he's around middle of the pack in efficiency on those. But if we look at the corner shooting, where he's been fantastic, almost 50% on the season, pin-in screens, he's almost 1.2 points per possession on those. And basically a pin-in screen, for people who don't know, is like when somebody's in the corner and a guy who's in the dunker spot screens the corner man to create an opening in the corner. It's not the, like, best screen in basketball, but it's a good one. And he cans triples out of it.
It's also, like, very often an illegal screen.
Yeah.
There are a lot of guys who just kind of shuffle with the defender. Like, Marc Gasol was unbelievable at those.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, some of it is he's huge, but some of it is also Marc Gasol was very, very smart at, like, oh, ref's got his eyes elsewhere.
Yeah.
I can grab and stay with him a little bit.
Yeah.
Those are fun. S, when you look at the the kind of variability in Grady's package that Samson's laying out here. Obviously, again, the corner three-point shooting is great, and you can always tick that volume up. There are guys like Malik Beasley has taken 200 corner threes this year. That is Grady's taken in the 80s. So there is obviously a way to scale up your corner three usage.
For sure.
But if you look at the guys who have taken the most corner threes in the league, it's Malik Beasley, Mikal Bridges, Sadiq Bey, Dante DiVincenzo, Taurean Prince, Harrison Barnes. Those are not guys, maybe a little bit with Mikal Bridges, but like those are not guys you're running a lot of offense for, right? Yep. Those are role players who are spotting up. So when you look at potential growth for Grady, or even what you want to see over these last nine games, how much of that is focused on what's the above the break stuff that's really going to make Grady scale into a more important offensive piece?
I think that's an eventual thing that I want to see. I think more so if you look at what his role will be next season with this team or in the foreseeable future with this team, he's going to be playing alongside guys like Quick, Scotty, right, RJ, and those guys for the most part are going to be handling the above the break shots, the creation load. And so he's going to be camped out in the corner quite often. And I think, you know, you look back, we've all been there early in Raptors games to see Grady work out and like go through his workout process. A lot of what he starts with is that corner offense. It's coming off of a pin down. It's kind of working through the shot selection that he goes through, the footing, the foot placement that he goes through just to like get those shots right. And I think the evolution of what that looks like next season is going to be important to get to that point where he's taking 200 corner threes. And that's part of the, like, when we look at how Grady can look in his next step, his next process, it's mastering that corner spot. And I think so far he's done that. The next step is making plays out of the corner too. And for what it's worth, I think he has had moments where he's taking the ball, getting downhill, drawing the defense, or at the same time, if he's coming off of two pin downs, there's two guys already flying to him and he's making the pass over top or he's making the read to the extra open man. And so like those aspects are he has such a high level of feel already for making reads and just making like the extra pass that eventually it'll start to expand out to the above the break shots and that'll work.
Yeah. Some of those good turnovers as well as Samson likes to point out.
He doesn't have a lot of them.
No, but there was one last week, like right before, and I made a joke about it on Twitter, like right before the media game, you were like, see, some turnovers are good. And I was like, are you priming us for the turnovers you're going to make in this game? But yeah, being able to see those reads and anticipate what a defense is going to do, you know, that's a layer further, right? Like it's, especially as a rookie, you know, we talk about this more with scorers who have the ball in their hand, but the first thing is, can you score? And then it's like, okay, can you score against the best defender?
Yep.
Okay, well now a defense is going to react to you. Maybe they send two, things like that. Can you react to that? And then eventually it's like, okay, you're going to get trapped on every pick and roll. Can you handle that? And then that last layer is, can you anticipate what a defense is going to do and even manipulate them into doing what you want so you can open things up? And some guys don't get there, right? Like that's the point, in my opinion, Jason Tatum's stuck on right now. He hasn't got to that level. He can react to what a defense does, but he's not manipulating them. You're not overhauling your defense to take stuff away from Jason Tatum because of what he can do. I'm not saying Grady Dick's going to get to that, but as an off-ball guy, the evolution is kind of, okay, hit the corner three, okay, hit off of movement, and now, yeah, this is something Gary's improved at a lot as well, and Gary uses it more to get into his kind of sidestep long two package, which on this team is a okay shot. You know, in some team environments, you maybe wouldn't want that, and then to a lesser extent, to get into that like elbow extended floater range stuff that he does. But with Grady, what you probably want to see is, can you get to the rim, first of all, because that'll speak to his burst and his, you know, strength, really. Like you mentioned, he has some nice finishes.
Yeah.
And I do, like, he's got that nice little attack out of the corner on the baseline, do a little reverse finish move. But he's also shooting, like, 59% or something like that at the rim. Like, he'll have to get stronger and finish that more. But that's one layer. And then, yeah, the layer you're talking about is, okay, well, then there's the laydowns and things like that. And then it's like, I'm going to come off of this, and I already know that weak corner help's coming in case I get to the paint. And that guy's going to lift out of the corner when that help comes to the paint. And I'm going to swing that over, to the wing part of the corner. And so the fact that he is seeing those things and reading those things pretty early is encouraging. Samson, I know that those kind of plays were something that drew you to him in the first place. Like we talked about him before the draft last year, and he was a guy that you were high on. That was there a little bit at the start of the season. Like I remember the opener, I think, or the home opener. He did a bunch of those cool plays, but it kind of went away. How much of that do you think is just like the comfort level, or how much of it is once the threes drop, that stuff opens up a little bit more comfortably for you?
I think threes dropping obviously makes everything easier because it gives you more room to operate. But also, if you're going to draw these, you know, advantage closeouts, if you're going to get a lot of movement from the defense, you have to expect digs and rotations. And so the biggest problem for Grady right now as far as, you know, initiating above the break is like lack of burst out of the handle, out of a pick and roll. And also that when the dig comes from the weak side at the nail, he struggles with that a lot. And typically the only pass he's been making is to above the break behind himself or above the break across from himself. And there's not a lot of creation there because usually teams can recover on that pass.
If you help, if you dig at the nail, you're still like one good defensive slide away from that pass.
And there's not a ton of like, he's not manipulating it that like as soon as the player digs, that's when the pass goes out. It's like the dig comes, he picks up his dribble, the player starts recovering out, and that's where a lot of his turnovers come to. To your point about like building out the offense from the corner, I think above the break is really important as well. Like not even just working towards that in the future, but immediately over these 10 games, we see him come off like a curl, do the shoulder check like Paul George behind him, put one dribble down and throw an oop to Chris Boucher, making that cut out of the corner. Great pass. We also see him like, as far as two-point shots, very tight contests. He shoots 48% against them. Tight contests, he shoots 48% of them. High release point. He can manage like his shot and get to it in the middle of the floor. Mm-hmm. That allows him to expand his playmaking from the middle of the floor. I talked to him the other night. When you play Jalen Brunson, do you look at how he manages the middle of the floor, how he uses his pivots and size to be able to create for himself? And I asked him, like, do you look to do that in your own game to open this kind of stuff up? And he said, yes, these are learning opportunities for me to grow my own game. So it's about getting like downhill to create. Because as you mentioned, like making these passing reads, this is something that really popped off for him in his draft workouts. Teams run through those like, okay, we're bringing the weak side help. It's a like a weak side zone. Are you baiting the guy above the break or to the corner? Which pass do you make as like a consequence of that? Be better than Jason Tatum in this workout, basically. And so he did really good at making those reads. And as like S said, getting out of the corner, a lot of that is like a physicality thing too. You see like when he's working pregame, a lot of what they talk about is like the guy working with him is just going to like lean on him, put an arm around him, seatbelt him. And it's like, okay, burst it back, like go back door. Make sure you can finish there. But ideally, this is why they run like 99th percentile wide pins. They want Grady bringing teams to step up above the break. Like you don't want him in the corner forever. You don't want to space to the corner. You want to space above the break so that cuts are more dangerous.
And this is an NBA-wide thing. It's not unique to Grady, is that corner threes are still valuable and that's helpful spacing. But geometrically, basketball has mostly figured out how to defend space horizontally.
Yeah.
And the next way, like the reason that guys like Steph and Dame and Kyrie are so dangerous is that they've forced defenses to stretch out vertically as well. And that creates obviously more space. And if you have to defend the pick and roll at 30 feet instead of 25 feet, you know, that's more ground your defenders have.
Part of that offensive explosion, right?
Yeah, it's more ground your defenders have to cover. Those 4-on-3 situations that materialized that LeBron and JJ were talking about on Mind the Game, those now have more space to operate. If you're Draymond underneath that Steph trap, you've got an entire court to play 4-on-3 in instead of from the free throw line down where everything's tight and you have to make those decisions a little quicker. So that is important. When it comes to how, and look, we're getting a healthy dose of what Darko envisions Grady's role being in terms of like tactics and play calling and things like that, because he's their number two source of offense after Gary Trent right now. And some of the stuff that you would run for those two guys is kind of similar, right? Mm-hmm. Like the old Terrence Ross stuff from the playbook that Gary inherited and Norm inherited. There aren't a lot of guys you're running stuff for. So when it comes to, and I want to save the like, okay, how does this fit with Scotty? How does it look next year? At least a little bit for the second segment of the show. But when it comes to how the Raptors are using Grady now, how much does, if those above the break threes, which are at like 27-28% now, those can become like 34-35%, how much does that open up playbook wise and just like in terms of what you can do with a guy like Grady Dick?
I mean, the first thing, and this was applicable when they were playing with those guys too, using him as a screener, like a screen the screener, if we're bringing up the whole LeBron James pod, they talked about that a lot. Inverted pick and roll is a big aspect of that too, and you can use Grady as a screener for Scotty or whatnot. And now, like we can talk about that in the second segment, but in general, using him, like you said, above the break to create for a guy like Scotty to get downhill or a guy like Quickly to get downhill, slipping these screens, ghost actions to be able to open himself up. And so, you know, we've seen it so far. He draws a lot of attention, a lot of attention coming off of multiple screens. And I think that just that raises a level of, like, it's shooting gravity. You know, we've seen it with Klay Thompson for the last like 10 years of his career. The fact that when he's coming off of screens or if he's coming off of a handoff, two guys fly to him almost immediately because they're aware, especially above the break, that he can let go and let that fly. And so once Grady starts to add that element in, there's these drop-off passes, 4-on-3 situations, like you mentioned, that open up the floor. And the Raptors have so many good connectors that the offense can start flowing that way too. Scotty's a great connector. Jakob, right? Kelly. And you have these guys who can make these secondary reads. It opens up the offense to be very, very potent. And I think a lot of that can come from Grady too.
So one other thing we've seen Grady do a tiny bit of, but not a lot. When you look at, you know, like his play types and stuff like that, it's a lot of spot up, transition, and off screen. He's actually one of the highest volume off screen guys, just in terms of all screens, not just the wide pin downs you were talking about. Samson, 93rd percentile in possessions used off of screens, which weirdly you would think the numbers were high. Like, it's only 58 times finishing a possession off of a screen, and that's 93rd percentile. But whatever.
Is that like per 100?
No, that is just that's total? Just overall per synergy. Yeah, I mean, synergy's play type stuff is not as
it's different. Right?
It's not as high fidelity as the second spectrum stuff. Anyway, according to this, he has only had 14 possessions as a pick and roll ball hand. 14 possessions finished. He's run more than 14 pick and rolls, but only 14 possessions where he's shot out of a pick and roll as the handler, and 35 overall, which includes passes made out of things like that. We saw the other day him and Ochai run a pick and pop successfully. Where are you in terms of so much of what we're talking about is, okay, Grady spotting up or Grady off the ball, using his gravity, coming off of screens and things like that to open things up, either for himself or for the next pass. With the ball in his hands, we still haven't seen a ton of it. In addition to only 35 kind of pick and roll possessions, he has not really been asked to isolate at any point, as you'd expect. Yeah. But how much have you been able to get out of those few possessions we have seen Grady where they ask him to initiate a little bit more? Is it still too early to really read much of anything from it?
It's not been very good. I think he's definitely more potent in handoffs. Like, he's strange that he's 77th percentile as a passer out of handoffs, which speaks to, like, coming up the floor. We talk about that vertical spacing again. You force the step up, because he just had last game. He ran out of the corner. Gary Trent handed him the ball, and he just banged one from 26, 27 feet. That's, like, the promise of Grady that you want to see. And so that kind of stuff gets teams to step up. And handoff is much better for shooters and, like, active off-ball guys, because it doesn't require you to have, like, an elite dribble to get around. And basically, like, everyone remembers watching Grady. I can't remember who stole the ball from him. Maybe it was Tatum. I can't remember exactly. But he dribbled the ball up the floor, and it was like the Jaws music was playing. And, like, you knew he was going to lose the ball. And so the handle isn't where it needs to be for, like, this high-level creation. And that's not a knock on Grady.
Oh, it's very early for that still.
Super. And that's something we see with Scotty. Like, the handle and the manipulation is he can't really take an ice, make it into an over, or, like, beat an under by, like, being really clever about getting into the rescreen. Like, Grady's not close.
I don't think there's anybody on the Raptors that is. But yeah, that's a different story.
I mean, Quickly would be the closest.
Right,
But even he would, like, if somebody goes under, he's not trying to rescreen. He's just going to pull. Yeah. But regardless, Grady has a ton of work to do there. I think it makes more sense, like, as you talked about, two pin downs, like, coming off of a stagger and using Scotty as one of those screeners so that if teams chase over. We see the Miami Heat do this all the time with Jimmy in a stagger. It's like Grady comes over, gets the ball, pops the ball over to Jimmy, and you can run a pick and roll with, like, Jimmy and Bam, who are the stagger screeners.
And then the shooter relocates. Duncan Robinson is flying off into the opposite corner or something.
And so you can get the defense in motion to step up so that players like Scotty or Jimmy Butler, who don't typically force teams to defend at 25, 30 feet for a pick and roll, you can change the complexion of the defense by forcing the team to step up to guard Grady and then running a pick and roll against a defense that has stepped up, so that if you want to make that high-low read to Jakob, or if you want to make, like, Scotty getting downhill, the defense isn't, you know, batting down their hatches in the paint. Like, there's tons of things you can do like that. And Grady can be, you know, a vehicle for those types of sets, just not only as, like, a scorer or a passer, but a movement shooter to change the shape of the defense.
There's there was actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because in the LeBron and JJ pod, they sort of mentioned that same action and having a big who's not necessarily a shooter on the weak side where they can essentially, like, JJ's flying off of two pin downs. If nothing happens, then he pitches it to either Embiid or whoever it was on the Sixers or even the Clippers, Blake Griffin, and then they'll do a handoff action. It's a wide open corner three for JJ all the time. And, like, that's some of that off-ball movement, just, like, gravity stuff that you can create an element of, I don't know, it's shot-making in its own right, but it's not necessarily creation juice.
I'm so pissed, man, that, like, mind the game is a thing now. Everyone's going to think everybody's... I'm getting all my stuff from LeBron and JJ.
He's bouncing around, man. Nah. Yeah.
You were first.
You were first.
And honestly, maybe more first. People understand what you're saying, right?
Dude.
It's like,
at the media game, they, like, Pat's team, they ran America's play off the inbounds.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
I was like, as you guys were running, I was like, you guys are running America's play?
Well, he drew it up, and then we're like, you expect us to run this properly? Yeah. And yeah, it worked. It worked.
Yeah, it was a fun little battle. Neither team executed the stuff very well. You guys went 1-4 flat with the, like, we're going to run around and us doing screen the screener stuff or the OG play, even just like double drag stuff. But it's like, we don't have two people large enough to screen.
Yeah.
This is where I would have had some value, someone who could just stick a screen and get in the way physicality wise. But the Redick thing is a good example, right? Because that series in 2019 where he's on Philadelphia against the Raptors, and he's not the second best player on Philadelphia in that series, not remotely close. But I bet if you were in those film sessions, when it comes to how much work you have to do on a guy and their part of the playbook and what your defense looks like, Redick is probably right there after, okay, what are our double team principles on Embiid? What are our help principles on Embiid? And then after that, even though this is a team with Jimmy Butler and Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris, after that, it's probably, well, they're going to run all this JJ stuff. And even if JJ only gets 15 points in this game, if we don't lock in on that stuff, it's going to be 15 points for JJ and a couple extra easy points for Jimmy and a couple extra easy points for Embiid, a corner three here and there for Mike Scott or James Ennis or whoever. Like guys like that. Really,
Mike Scott. Wow. That's a throw, man.
The office
emoji,
manager himself.
Emoji tattoo.
I believe a big hockey jersey collection too, which was funny when he came to Toronto. Okay. So we're talking a lot about what's been good with Grady. And a lot of that is centered on the last, well, certainly all of the good stuff is centered on the last 2 months, and there's been some really good stuff the last couple weeks. That's been a lot while Scotty Barnes is out. He's only played 33% of his minutes this year alongside Scotty Barnes. So let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what this version, where Grady is right now, and we'll talk a little bit about what he could look like next year. He's got a whole offseason of development that I think will really focus on the strength and physicality kind of stuff. But when Scotty Barnes is back and the other pieces are back, how does this version of Grady transport to a more competitive Raptors environment with some of these guys back? That is next as the Raptors show continues on the Sports Hub Radio Network.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky, spicy soup. I'm Blake Murphy. Will Lou off for a well-deserved little long weekend here. He had to carry the show with me on the sidelines. So Samson and S got to guest host a couple of those episodes, and they did okay. So we brought him back. We brought him back.
They asked for us back.
Who's they?
They? The, you know, out in the
almighty
ether,
power.
The almighty they.
No, the
powers that be.
The most feedback I've gotten lately is like, shouldn't you just start Jays Talk Plus now at this point in the Raptors season?
That was from me because I need it for my walks.
Yes, for your commute. That'll be soon. April 18th is the official date. There's also one day next week where I'm double dipping. We're going to do this 11 to 12 and then the Jays play at 1. So I'm just going to do 12 to 1 too.
You're a grinder, man.
No, those days are fun though. Like the pregame slot when there's a weekday afternoon game is so good.
Early baseball kind of rocks to talk about. Yeah. Everything is like interesting and cool.
And just like, I don't know, like there's a 1:30 game today and a 3:00 game today. And then the Jays play at 6:50.
I have to like switch my mindset. Cause we are both fans of a football club, Juventus, right? Yeah. And like when I'm watching them, I have to like completely switch if I'm watching a different sport. So for you to be like, oh yeah, this to this for 2 hours and then switch over, I'm like, damn, that's That's impressive in its own right.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. It also it gives you like a little bit of insulation if one team is going to be bad for a little bit.
True.
It's like, oh, well, I'm 60% Jays right now. Okay. So just to pivot back to basketball here, there are a lot of positive signs in the way Grady Dick has been playing lately. This is not, the correlation here is not causation. A lot of those good things have happened while Scotty Barnes and RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley and Jakob Poeltl are out. Some of that is expanded opportunity. Some of that is Grady improving, and you have to wonder, hey, if he were playing around better players, would this look even better? Like, the volume wouldn't be as high minutes-wise and field goal attempts-wise, but maybe he's even more efficient. Maybe there are a couple extra assists because of the way other teams are guarding the other guys around him. When you go from, no disrespect to Javon Freeman Liberty, who is a player that I like and I'm glad to see he's getting opportunity, the way a defense is going to approach Grady Dick when Javon's bringing the ball up the floor versus when Emmanuel Quickley is bringing the ball up the floor is dramatically different. So let's take the last 15 minutes we've got here and try to port what Grady Dick has done over the last 10, 15 games into a scenario where, yes, in the next couple games where RJ and Emmanuel Quickley are probably back, but even looking forward, when Scotty Barnes is back, when Jakob Poeltl is back, when this team is a more competitive team, how do you see some of what Grady's done here translating to a more competitive environment where he may not be as high a priority, but he's around better players?
Yeah, I mean, going back to the corner offense aspect, I think that's why they're doubling down on this so much and saying, hey, you have to maximize this area of the floor for yourself. And then from there, there's a trickle-down effect of the different types of things that he can do on the floor, whether it be the cutting. And I think the off-ball movement, the cutting aspect is something that's going to shine more once he's playing with a Jakob Poeltl, once he's playing with a Scotty Barnes, because those guys are so great at making passes in tight pockets that it'll open up the floor for him more often. And also, you talked about it with JJ. Like, yes, he was like the fourth option, but also, like, you have to plan for him on the scouting report in a certain way. Same thing's going to apply to Grady with the Raptors where, okay, on any given night, people are going to be worried about Scotty and his downhill game, IQ's pull-up shooting, RJ's ability to barrel to the paint, Jakob maybe in the kind of like a screen setter rolling aspect. And then Grady will have the opportunity to feast off of any advantages those guys create. And I think the feel that he's already shown this year is going to allow that to not only become more efficient, but also like dabble into things that we've seen him just flash this season, whether it's the pound dribble settling into a mid-range jump shot, whether it's finishing at the basket, whether it's like the backdoor cut if they're top blocking him. Like, all of these things can just be enhanced because he's playing with better players. And no offense to like any of the guys on the roster right now. Yeah, it's just natural, right?
So it's the G League thing. You're like, damn, this doesn't look that good at the G League level, but everything is multiplied once he gets to the NBA level.
And look, like, again, the better Grady Dick performances have trended toward the later part of the season, but even if you look at what his efficiency numbers are with and without Scotty, I only looked at Scotty. I didn't even look at Jakob, RJ, Quickley, and things like that. True shooting percentage up around 59% when Scotty's on the floor with him, down around 52% when he's not. So even with the improvement over this last little bit, you put the guy who defenses are most worried about on the floor, and at least in a small sample, Grady's, I would assume, gotten a little bit of room. Some of that's maybe he's just in the corner a little bit more, but also there's a little bit more room to operate. Let's focus this just on the Scotty element, Samson. So much of what we talked about when Emmanuel Quickley came over was how that works with Scotty. And even when Quickley had a couple of really nice games in a row, while Scotty was out, but before Quickley had to be out for the family matter, there was at least a little bit of like, okay, well, how does this work with Scott? Like, they had negative chemistry when they were playing together.
Yep.
Grady is someone I'd imagine, even if he's not in a direct action with Scotty, you'd probably see a lot of opportunity to, hey, Scotty is drawing an extra body shaded to this side of the floor. What can we do on the other side of the floor? How do you see Grady helping Scotty and vice versa?
So I think the easiest thing, the simplest thing is we've talked about earlier, the JJ Redick, Embiid, two-man game out of the corner. That's something hopefully, basically why that works is JJ Redick can shoot off of movement, which means that the two players guarding that action have to be connected to pop out so that he doesn't have clearance. And that's why it's really important that Grady has, for example, on two-point jumpers, 48% against tight contests, 48% against very tight. He can get the shot up comfortably and make those the same way JJ Redick. Well, not the same way JJ Redick.
He's also like 5 inches taller than JJ.
Which,
you know,
he's maybe like three.
Okay,
but
sure,
anyway. Whatever, yeah. So regardless,
Also, like, it should be said, J.J. Redick is, like, the best example in league history,
of
able to understand the game and, like, even, like, kind of patenting that one dribble. Like, you come around a screen and you take that one side dribble to just create a little extra space from that rear view contestant or late challenge around the closer and stuff. Like J.J. Redick.
Top tier. Like, it's.
Yeah, like, 100th percentile outcome as, like, an off-ball mover and understanding spacing and things like that. But, yes, the fact that Grady is a little taller, you know, there's a reason, for example, Matt Thomas' role couldn't scale, even though he shot a lot of threes, is, like, just couldn't get that separation, get that shot off at volume.
And so the big deal, obviously, is that you're going to create these dramatic contests over top, which create laydown opportunities. But even we talked about using that as, like, a main corner offense. You can run the primary action with Grady in the corner, and you can just automatic as the secondary action into something that should be in the future really dangerous. And playing next to Scotty, who is not a fast line drive player like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or like De'Aaron Fox or like TJ McConnell, Scotty is a guy who does bully drives, which is this unique mix of like posting up, flipping hips, getting downhill. Teams start to shade all at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it becomes really, teams have to be really principled to guard against cuts and to guard against drives that are bully drives. And so Grady, a very intuitive cutter, when teams aren't making these big drastic changes because it's like, okay, a guy's in the paint. We bring the low man. The other guy recovers out to the strong side corner. It's like, no, the team is like slowly morphing to this drive. Grady's intuitive cutting off of Scotty for those 45s baseline.
Oh, the strong side corner is not in the corner anymore.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That guy's not there. He's lifted out and then cut or something like that. So
It's important. It's a hand and glove fit. And also, like, you just look at like second spectrum handoffs with Scotty between Grady flexing as the handoff guy. Exactly. it's a good little play for them. And honestly, when you look at like Grady's points per chance in anything, If he doesn't have to be 70th percentile, which he is in some things, but even if he's just around the middle of the pack for a rookie who had to buoy the start that he had, any of these numbers being anything like, you know, palatable is a huge deal. And also the film like pops the hell off. So it looks good.
I'll just say on top of that, I think it takes a certain type of person to be willing to like, hey, I'm not very good at these certain things, or I know I can be better in these certain areas, and I'm just going to consume as much film as possible, be a sponge. Like, everybody you talk to about Grady, whether it was Garrett Temple, whether it's Gary, has said, like, he is one of the best learners that they've worked with because he's so willing to be like, I'm not good at this, but I can also work on this aspect. I'm able to be a sponge. He's mentioned that, like, 101 times. If you look at the quotes Grady has had, it's like, I'm trying to be a sponge. He is absorbing that knowledge in a lot of ways.
He's thugging out. Truly humble under God. He's humble, learning position, just trying to be the best man he can be.
Can I just say something about the Scotty note that you mentioned?
The
one thing is also, like, Scotty has to work to realize that, like, these relocation shooters are also there in some aspects, because I don't think he's used to playing with guys who are at, maybe Fred to a certain extent. Like, he was great at working with Fred, but...
Was he?
Well, I think generally, you look at some of the screening actions with IQ, some of the actions he's had with Grady, and it's just not there in terms of him realizing, okay, he is shaking up to the corner, he's shaking up. And, like, in general, you want him to get better as a screener, a guy who can be able to improve on that aspect, too, to open up opportunities for these guys. So that's... It's a two-man game for a reason, and, like, both sides sort of have to develop that chemistry. It's not just Grady finding ways to assimilate or IQ finding ways to assimilate to Scotty.
Okay, so we got 5 minutes left here. One thing I wanted to note, because you mentioned, you know, just how bad the start was. One thing that I was tracking early in the year, and this is a little tongue-in-cheek and me being a jerk, but if we look at dunksandthrees.com, which hosts estimated plus-minus EPM, which, you know, catch-all metrics aren't everything, but if you were going to pick one, this is the one I like most. There's a good chunk of the season where Grady was dead last in the entire league. And this is, like, rookies, because they don't have a large sample, like, you're regressing to league average a lot of that performance. So to be last in the league is, like, extra impressive. He has climbed up, even as the Raptors have been really, really bad. He's, like, safely not at the bottom anymore, which is nice to see, too. It doesn't mean all that much, but it does suggest that while things have been really, really bad for the Raptors, it's at least been a little better when Grady's on the floor, which for a guy who isn't your, you know, isn't a number one, doesn't have the ball in his hands a boatload, is a positive indicator. Even over the last couple games where they've, not last game because everyone got their teeth kicked in last game,
yeah.
But there was a, like, he was a plus six, I think, in the game before that. And I think he had a plus zero in there somewhere in games that, like, the team's not competitive, which these things don't really matter when you're losing by 20 and 30 and 44, but at least the team's playing okay. So one of the remaining concerns with Grady Dick, the offensive stuff is really coming along. And the defensive side, some of this is maybe going to be the strength and conditioning stuff over the offseason. Even on offense, he can, like we saw against Utah and Orlando, the physicality of bigger teams was still getting to him a little bit. Where are you guys at defensively? I know you had the tweet the other day about, like, hey, the fact that Grady was put on Jalen Brunson, I don't know, mate. For a good team that tells you that, for a good team that would tell you, well, this coach maybe thinks more highly about this defensive player than you do. In this situation, it was probably just to get him some a rep or two doing that. But in seriousness, we've only got 3 minutes. Where are we on Grady's defense? And, you know, has there been development there? Or is that still where we kind of expected?
So the defensive playmaking is not as high up as I thought it might be. But the defensive impact overall, I think, is higher now than if you would ask me before the season, even, where I expected it to be. And maybe it's because he is getting so many more minutes, and he gets to, like, as a guy who is a cerebral defender instead of, like, a really athletic player, he has to beat guys to spots. He has to be familiar with the scouting report. He has to rely on, like, other players' tendencies that he can sit on to be impactful. And that's how you see him, like, beating guys to spots, taking charges, and, like, honestly, just being, like, in the gaps to help. Mm-hmm. Those types of things, the work he puts in, being a sponge, perhaps, in different ways, not just on offense, that's really important. And so those things are showing up. He's still not a good defender, though. He's a young man who doesn't have the same body that everyone else does just yet, and he's not, like, the fastest foot speed
also,
guy.
Also, we weren't expecting him to be a good defender coming in.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with everything that you said. Double vouch on the just in general that he's not a good defender. But I think there are moments where you can see him process the defensive side a little bit more, make the read. And even if he doesn't get to the spot because of that foot speed, like, he knows that's the rotation he's supposed to make. And so that'll eventually grow. And I think that's a growing issue for the Raptors moving forward, is just, how are you going to be able to scrape up a good enough defense in general?
You see, like, Jordan Wara and Jalen McDaniels, they're icing the screen, and Jordan Wara iced it, and then Jalen McDaniels played it like he was, like, going to hedge. So the whole side of the floor open up is a wide open layup. Grady doesn't make those mistakes, which is nice.
Yeah.
All right. We've only got a 2 minutes left here. So very, very quickly, tomorrow is the Raptors Republic 3-on-3 tournament. Down at TMU. How you guys feeling? You taking this down or what? I made the schedule yesterday.
I don't know what our groups are. Like, do we know who we're playing?
I don't know. They didn't even put, like, I think they labeled us as RR, even though we're the pull-up tray team. But, like,
you didn't have a name. Yeah, it just is RR. But so Zarar sent me the list of teams and, like, everyone's, like, self-evaluation of how good they are. So I try to balance the groups out a little bit. But obviously, like, the group you guys are in, I loaded up with the media teams.
So, good. Okay. So from last year, and this is, like, we're Miami Heat this year. Okay. Trey is down like 30 pounds. Aleg's down like 30 pounds. I'm down like 15 pounds. If we're not better, we'll look better.
Okay.
Notice how he didn't mention me. I'm bulking.
I was also going to say, wasn't a lack of size the issue last year? You guys should have been getting better.
We've got the muscle to contend now.
Yeah.
You guys are going to.
We'll do good.
Look, I'm healthy this year.
Yeah, your lungs are going to be in great shape after all those losses.
You're right.
You guys get posted up into oblivion.
We'll get
the W. Not in the group stage. I think looking at who the teams were that I put in your group stage, I think you'll probably be okay in the group stage. But
thank you.
Yeah, like there's an A division because, like, there are only 15 teams this year, so I had to redo the usual format. So the number one overall seed gets a bye out of that, like, really good division with, like, the defending champs and stuff. So.
Right.
If you run into those.
The defending champs are tough, man. Yeah,
the first guy I defended last year was 6'6". Like, it was like 8:45 a.m., and I had to...
You need a fire hydrant in the post.
You use your knee as a lever to take their legs out, and then they can spin off of you, but you have to be... Okay, yeah.
All right, well, good luck tomorrow. We don't need to break down the film. That does it for us today. Sips of Folk, Espandi, Arbera, Haney. Thanks for coming on, guys. I've been Blake Murphy. Will Lou will be back with me on Monday. This has been the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up.